This is First Cast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to First Cast. This is Matt Crash from 263.
This is Connor Ryan from 1403.
This is Adam Richard from 1341.
And this is Andy.
This is Mark
with Andy Mark.
We're here to bring you episode 4 of First Cast. Happy to have everybody here today. Got a lot of stuff planned for you guys today. We have some news, we have some Andy Mark, and we have some other stuff that you guys been requesting lately. So if it's okay with you guys, I'm going to move right into the news that we have, or mostly dates that you guys have to watch out for. If you guys noticed, we have some new dates and stuff. Remember, Tier 1 opens up November 11th, if you guys might hear this by now. Tier 1's when everybody gets to register, including the teams that were there last year. And also notice that, if you guys didn't get the memo yet, first changed some dates, particularly for the Inventor Award, Visualization Awards. So if you guys don't get a chance, check out the usfirst.org site for their calendar of important deadlines. Adam, or Matt, you guys got anything?
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's heard by now. Andy Mark has released some new products. I believe they have a new one-speed transmission now, but I don't know the details on it. Andy or Mark, can you help us out with that?
Sure, we'd like to. This is Andy Baker, and with Mark Coors, we have Andy Mark here, and we have different gearboxes, we have different wheels, and we have a mode switch for teams to buy. Matt asked about the single-speed gearbox. It has the same gear ratio as the kit gearbox that was provided to the teams last year. It has a little smaller output shaft. It's a little bit simpler in its casing around the gearbox, and we just wanted to provide a single-speed, inexpensive solution for teams that wanted to gear down the RPMs of the sim motor.
Just a quick question on that. Is that a one motor or two motor transmission?
It'll take two motors. It'll run with one or two.
When do you guys think it's going to be released?
Well, we wish we had parts ready now. We have a supplier that's cutting metal for us right now, and within probably 3 weeks, I believe, we'll have parts ready to sell. We have some prototypes made, and they look fine. We just don't have the higher volume parts yet.
I also noticed you had a traction wheel on it. Is that the same thing that a team like 179 is using?
The traction wheel is a very common design. Heck, you know, 179, 60, 254, 217. There's all kinds of teams that have used conveyor belt material, either the wedge top or the rough top material, riveted or screwed or even sewn around a plastic or a metal hub.
Or even tie wrap.
Yeah, we've seen a tie wrap. These are actually going to be screwed onto a molded plastic hub with 832 screws into steel rivet nuts, and then there is an aluminum hub that's screwed to the side of the wheel that will accept a sprocket, and that would be the ideal way to drive the wheel. Now, we've already had some questions about creating a half-inch ID-driven hub for this wheel, so that might be a future product for us. If not, it's also an easy thing for teams to make, and if we don't offer it as a product in the future, we'll probably offer the design for someone to make that themselves.
Very nice stuff. One thing I was wondering about your gearbox, is this the exact same ratio or close ratio to the first kit boxes?
It's the exact same gearing. It's a 14-tooth gear off of the sim motor, and then it mates with a 50, and then there's a 14-tooth gear on that same shaft as the 50, and that turns another 50-tooth gear. So it's the same ratio as the kit transmission that teams are familiar with from last year.
Okay, let's move on to your next product. How about your famous, now somewhat famous, Andy Mark Shifter, your two-speed transmission now commercially available.
The two-speed transmission has a lot of history on Team 45. Mark and I have been on Team 45 for years, and so in 2002 we created a two-speed shifter using a dog-style gears. And there are a handful of other teams, two or three other teams that had a somewhat similar shifting mechanism that year. We got a lot of credit for it because we posted the design in the summer after 2002. So every year we've improved upon that design, and now we have a very efficient, lightweight design that we now sell to whoever wants to buy them, the first team or even people outside of first. Actually, this past summer we had a couple people buy this shifter gearbox that knew nothing about first. So it was kind of neat to see that. So this is something that we've developed over the years, and it's a common design that a lot of teams use, so we thought, well, we might as well just start making this thing available to teams who might not have the fabrication resources that other teams do.
So I'm wondering, I mean, as far as I know, you two both still work at Delphi. Why did you start Andy Mark? I mean, Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you're in it for the money.
It's a good question. It's a thrill for both of us. We both love doing this. And I remember sitting on my back porch with Mark Coors, Chris Byam, our lead teacher of Technocats, and a couple other engineers. I think it was the summer after 2003, and we said, would the team actually be interested in selling these parts to other teams? And through some of the difficulties with financing and overhead and inventory and a lot of the risk involved, we decided, well, we really were told that the team and the school would not be interested in doing something like this. They would not be willing to back something like that. Then our next question was, well, would you guys mind if we went out on our own and did this effort? And everybody said, well, that sounds like a great idea. Good luck. So Mark and I went out and did this. And actually, my dad was a CPA, a small business owner himself. So he really prodded Mark and I to do this. So he saw a lot of potential for both of us to be successful in this area.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Just so you get another quick question about the shifter. Can you get into the specifics of how it's changed from last year?
There's really only some minor changes from last year. The one that you see on our site with the kind of it's like a gold plating material. What plating do we use on that, Mark?
It's cadmium plate.
It's a cadmium plate steel. And those are steel sheet metal plates on the side. The only improvements that we've made over last year are just simple things that make it easier for us to assemble it. Clearance holes are bigger here and there, and just to save us time to get it assembled quicker.
Yeah, we also made some changes to the shifter and stuff. The way we were retaining it caused it, we had to always debug shifting and stuff, and the new design makes it shift a lot easier. So we've got a big improvement in the shifting.
Your new Omni wheels and Trick Wheel.
Now the Trick Wheel and the Omni wheel, I guess we're most excited about the potential of those parts. Now the Trick Wheel is the aluminum sheet metal constructed wheel that we sold last year. It has different types of rollers for different applications. There's a higher traction roller made out of EPDM rubber that's black, one that's white out of neoprene rubber, then one that's a harder plastic.
Acetal.
Like a Delrin acetal. That's a rugged wheel. It kind of bounces as it rolls. It's not as smooth as we would like it to be. Plus, it costs a lot of money to make. All three of those sheets are laser cut in order to be fabricated. So we actually had a note. We had an email from a guy in San Jose this past summer saying he wanted to buy 1,000 Omni. He's looking to buy 1,000 Omni wheels. And so we perk up right away, and we think, wow, how can we get the price down with these Trick Wheels? And so we look to create a molded wheel that's going to be lower cost at higher volumes. So we actually contract to have a mold made. We molded little rollers, and so we have a new molded plastic Omni wheel. It's 6-inch and 8-inch. It's a lighter weight wheel. It's molded out of 10% glass filled polycarbonate or Lexan, and the body is black, and the rollers are made out of SBR rubber. And actually, we visited our molder today. We have some prototypes made of this, but we're still waiting to pour plastic into our molds. So the prototypes are working out fine, but we just want to see final product. And we want to really get these wheels into other markets, like maybe wheelchair markets or shopping carts or heck, even lawnmowers. If we get a larger diameter wheel, we think there's a lot of promise for an Omni wheel in other markets, even consumer markets.
Sounds like you have some really great products. There's one more that we would like to mention, though. I saw your mode selector switch. That looks interesting, especially from my background as a programmer, because we're always cobbling together disable and autonomous switches.
Yeah, the mode switch it's really a pretty simple product. One of the things we wanted to do, though, is make it a little bit better than what Teams could make. You know, it has basically two switches, one for enable versus disable, and another for auto or manual. But we added one little extra flavor to the switch by adding a big stop switch part to it, so that no matter how you hit the box, you could disable the robot immediately.
Like we discussed before, you guys still work at Delphi, right? Can you tell us a little bit about your jobs there?
I've been at Delphi since 92, and Mark's been there longer than I have. I work as a machine design engineer in the automation department. our customers are the production floor, and our department makes specialty automation equipment for the production floor. And that's pretty much day to day. That's about a, for me, it's about an 8 to 6 job. So that pays the bills, it gets the benefits, it keeps my family supported. And so for me, this AndyMark stuff is definitely a moonlighting job.
Yeah, I've been at Delphi now probably 31 years. I started there actually in 1973 as a co-op student at GMI, and since then I've had a number of jobs, but it's been pretty exciting. I've gotten a lot of promotions, stuff like that, but this AndyMark thing came along, and it seems like a natural step for me to transition from my Delphi job into AndyMark.
Andy, so you're kind of working more with the manufacturing engineering industry end of it?
Yeah, I've been in manufacturing engineering since I hired in. It's not easy. I mean, Delphi is either, I think it's the largest automotive parts supplier in the world. Our major competitors, Motorola, Siemens, Nippon Denso, Bosch, and we make a lot of money off of innovative products that we create, and that's really where Mark comes in, but we have to ship the stuff out the door. And, you know, there's a lot of demanding customers out there in automotive, you know, and they deal with rejects in the single digit parts per million. So when you're making a part and shipping it out the door, if a goal is to meet 3 rejects per million, that's ultra stringent with quality. So that quality drives most things in manufacturing, most of our challenges are in that area. It's every day there's something that's a new challenge, which is fun and exciting, but it's also fairly stressful.
Yeah, I'm on the other end of the thing, probably closer to the beginning. I do a lot of product development, and currently I'm in the occupant detection systems and stuff. And basically, we develop products that determine who's sitting in the passenger seat to make a decision whether or not to fire the airbag or how strong to fire the airbag. And that really becomes a very quality conscious project, because you want to have almost zero failures, because you don't want to be responsible for causing a death because you didn't fire the airbag correctly. So that can be stressful.
So that's pretty interesting. So actually, the new van that we got a couple months ago actually has that feature that Mark was talking about, that if someone's standing there or not, the airbag will go on or off. That's actually really cool that you see some of the stuff that you guys are putting into actual products that you can buy on a much, much larger scale.
Yeah, those are really, we got pretty good market penetration with that. Although the system you got's kind of an old system. I'm working on stuff for like 2008. Right now your system just differentiates between like a 6-year-old and a 5th percentile female. The new systems have to differentiate between a 3-year-old, 6-year-old, 5th percentile, 50th percentile, and 95th percentile male. So it's basically 5 different states it has to go to. The other nice thing about it is it's a government-mandated business. Every car that's sold in the U.S. has to have one of these systems. So it makes a neat opportunity for Delphi to get into that market, because everybody has to have one.
So are there any other products that you guys could be like coming out with at Delphi in the coming months, then, that you guys we might be seeing eventually down the line in our new cars?
Basically, we cannot talk about new stuff coming out. It's not our position to announce those things.
Good question, though, but yeah, we could get in trouble.
Have a lot of patents with AndyMark and with Delphi. Can you guys tell us about some of those?
Well, we don't have any patents with AndyMark. Everything that you see on our site, we don't have any patents right now with AndyMark. We'd like to pursue some proprietary protection down the road with some new parts, new thoughts that we have, but no AndyMark patents. I have 4 patents at Delphi, and trying to remember which ones they are. Oh, 2 of them I'm on with Mark, because we've worked so closely together over the years. One of them is the ball drive system pretty much Mark came up with this in 2003, and I helped him design it and the details of it, and we got it created in the fall of 2002, and then tried to implement it for the 2003 game, but it really wasn't a feasible drive base for that year's game, but we built one anyway. Actually, Mark built one, and our kids and our other mentors built a track drive system for our regular robot. Mark probably has more interesting patents than I do, and he has much more, so he can talk more about that.
Yeah, there's one, like the other patent Andy was talking about, the other one we have together is for a weather monitoring system. Basically, it's a unit that monitors weather, and it's a low-cost sensor, basically, that can measure wind speed, wind direction, rainfall, things like that. And, you know, that's an interesting one that we've gone along with and stuff. And I think Delphi is going to pursue that with a product, and that'll be really nice. Some of my other patents, though, they vary from a lot of different things. I have background in electrical, optical, and mechanical stuff, so I have a lot of varied different ones. If anybody's interested in finding out what patents anybody has, all you have to do is go to uspto.gov and then search for a keyword like a person's last name, and then you can find all the patents that that person has.
Yeah, the weather monitoring patent, I remember that. That was pretty funny. I think Mark and I went out to lunch one day, and he was telling me about this idea he had for a patent. Actually, he and a coworker, and I was listening. I said, oh, that's pretty cool. And I said, why don't you just do this also? He said, well, you just got your name on a patent. Because whenever you add something or have a little input on someone else's idea before it's released, and it's productive, then you get to be a part of that patent. So that's a cool thing.
Very interesting stuff. So how many patents do you each hold?
I have 4.
I have actually 14 right now, plus 3 or 4 pending.
And Delphi promotes us to pursue patents, so they own the rights to these patents, although our names are on them. But they put up the money, they put up the effort to get them searched and approved.
Yeah, it costs anywhere from $4,000 to $8,000 a patent.
Wow, I thought I was impressed with getting one patent, which I haven't even gotten yet. I'm still working on that. But you guys mentioned the ball drive before, which brings back to my next topic here I wanted to talk to you about. You built the ball drive with 45. I remember seeing actually a test robot with a ball drive in 2003 in Texas. How do you guys run the team? I mean, it seems you run it a lot more efficiently than most teams. My team would never have time to take on a side project like that. So can you tell us a little bit about your team structure?
Well, I'll try. We've gone through a lot of changes over the years. We're, like I said before, we come from Team 45. Delphi sponsors the team. Kokomo High School is the main school. Also, Kokomo Area Career Center, which is the tech school. And also, Ivy Tech Community College in Kokomo is part of the team. We started in 1992 when actually Delco at the time, our former name before Delphi, Delco actually was approached by someone within GM. I think Tom Stevens within GM was, and so he came to Delco, asked us to start a team. We went to the school and asked them to partner up with us. Over the years, we've changed from building the machine in a UAW skilled trade shop, so now we have a shop that only has equipment, pretty much manual equipment, that the students and the adult mentors use together. We run the team really amongst, this year we run it amongst 3 team leaders, myself as the engineering team leader, Chris Byam is the lead teacher, and Kyle Love is a lead student. And the load is shared fairly evenly across us 3. During different years, the student maybe hasn't done enough, or the teacher's been busy with other things, but we cover for each other pretty well. We set up a schedule. We send it out to all the parents, all the kids. We have a team handbook that defines how our team is ran throughout the year. So with the schedule and the handbook, you know, if a parent or a new student comes onto the team and wants to learn about TechnoCats, it's pretty well defined and pretty well set, so they know what to expect throughout the year. We have a pretty decent balance, in my opinion, between student empowerment and leadership, and also adult involvement and inspiration. We have about, I'd say, 35 active kids on the team. We don't require all 35 kids to be at every single meeting. especially in the fall, because we understand that some kids have other things to do. We require 50% attendance at our meetings and work sessions during the build season, which is pretty loose compared to a lot of the teams. We have a lot of active mentors and parents on the team, and we get along pretty well. We're a pretty close group, and we do a lot together in the fall, and we have some fun in the spring as we're building a robot.
Yeah, but as to that, on that ball drive system, though, that was really pretty stressful that year, because basically we had to break our team into two teams, and one team works on one robot, and the other team worked on the robot. And I remember that year, the robot that we finally took to competition, I had very little content in the design or build of that thing. And so it was kind of interesting to watching that, and you really didn't have the ownership in it that I've had in previous years.
Also, one thing. I've noticed a lot of people on Chief Delphi forums, they gloat somewhat, you could say, about a 100% student-run team. And I don't think most of them realize how much stuff goes on in the background. I'm a student also. I don't know that much about the background. I'm not very, very much of a political fan, so I tend to avoid it. But can you just give us some kind of overview of the kind of stuff you guys handle behind the students? Because a lot of students don't seem to realize how much work goes into running a team.
Okay, well, background and stuff that goes on behind the students. When I first got on the team in 98, about once a month there was an adults-only meeting. And us adults, we'd talk about, you know, issues, fundraising. Maybe there's personality conflicts between some of the adults. Maybe someone needs to air some issues out and such. It tended just to be more of a business meeting, and it got to be more discussion about fundraising and stuff like that. So we have one adult meeting at the beginning of the year for us, and then that's about it. All of our meetings were open to all the students. Now, there might be some issues that pop up once in a while. There might be an issue with a student. Maybe they're doing something that might be inappropriate, and we need to discuss it amongst a few individuals. Maybe there's some sort of a penalty that might be need to come down. And really, the teachers on our team, the teachers handle that. The teachers, they do the dirty work with regard to discipline and punishment, and they keep us engineers as the good guys. And we can do the job of firing and showing the kids what we know to let them build better robots and figure out what they want to do. There's a lot of planning behind the scenes, but we've also let our students do a lot of that. Like for instance, last year, we had two student leaders on our team. This was 2005. And I had some... Well, one of my jobs was I set the schedule for the entire year, like I mentioned on this season schedule that we have. And I wasn't getting it done. I had a lot of family issues. I was needing to take...